This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. When it comes to economic growth, you might think about factories, businesses, warehouses, the jobs that come with them before you think of convention, travel, and tourism. But recent figures show the industry is a big contributor to the Cincinnati area's economy. And joining me now are President and CEO of the Cincinnati Convention and Visitors Bureau, Dan Lincoln, and President and CEO of the Northern Kentucky Convention and Visitors Bureau, Eric Summey. And if you have a question or comment, we'd really like to hear from you, so please give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's start off talking about what are the numbers for the convention business in the Cincinnati area. How many people do we have visiting? How much economic impact are they having?
Well, I guess I'll start it off because Dan and I and Linda Antis, who is the president of the Regional Tourism Network, more commonly known as Cincinnati USA, we recently conducted an economic impact study, and it was pretty profound what the results were. And we have, and again, Dan can correct me if I get the numbers wrong since this is conversational, but it's over 22 million people in 2011 did visit our region. On both sides of the river, who were visitors, and of course, the economic impact from that is over $4 billion.
That's pretty incredible. Is that kind of typical for a city the size of Cincinnati? Or
yeah, I think so. When you look at cities like Cincinnati, Louisville, Cleveland, Detroit, St. Louis, we're right in the hunt on in terms of where we should be in terms of total volume. Obviously, we're looking to increase those numbers, especially with all the momentum that's been going on throughout the region and throughout the city in terms of new restaurants, entertainment districts, over the Rhine, things happening on the Northern Kentucky side. The growth market has just been absolutely phenomenal. Couple that with the winning red season right now, and we're seeing a nice uptick.
And this is all despite the fact the economy has been running a little bit slower than usual.
Yeah, and in fact, if you look at our momentum, it's astounding and wonderful, the fact that, if anything, we've picked up momentum during the last 4 or 5 years instead of slowing down because of the economy. You look at all the different things, the Over the Rhine development that's going on, the Banks development that's going on, core downtown. There's things going on in the north, things going on in Northern Kentucky. This city it's found its mojo again.
Eric, what are some of the big conventions that Northern Kentucky has seen recently?
Well, we have had a couple of really big hits this year. In January, we hosted Ruritan, which is a North Carolina-based community service organization. And for us, it was a special benefit because January is pretty much a difficult month to attract convention business in Northern Kentucky or in the region because of the weather. But we had a big bump from that, and we had just finished doing a Siemens group. And then, of course, we have some other groups coming up, and I know that you wanted to talk about, you know, some of the specialty groups that are in there, and we even have one coming in this month, too.
Well, what would that be?
Well, it's called the – you're not going to believe this, but it's called the Infant Feeders – the American Collectors of Infant Feeders.
Really? There's a group that
– That is correct. And that is an
– There's a group for everything.
Yeah. And they collect – baby infant feeder paraphernalia.
Wow. And then Dan, on this side of the river, we have the we just had tattoo artists in here. We have the tattoo convention coming up this weekend.
Yeah, which is wonderful. You know, in fact, they were here in 2006, so we were really happy to see them come back. And you know, as Eric said, there's an association for everything, and we're on the hunt for all of them.
That's well, right. What goes into attracting convention business? How do you what's the process? How do you do this?
Well, for us, and again, we have I think we have some unique things that we have to do being Northern Kentucky, because I think your viewing audience has to remember that Northern Kentucky is a direction that happens to be a destination. So we have that issue right out of the chute that, you know, we have to get people to know where we are. The fact that we are adjacent in proximity to a great metropolitan area like Cincinnati, and yet we're part of that Kentucky Southern hospitality, is a great attraction to people. And so they can come to either Cincinnati or Northern Kentucky, and they can enjoy an entertainment experience on both sides of the river. And if we can get that message across, we normally do pretty well.
And Dan, from your standpoint, how do you go about attracting convention business?
Well, you know, the first thing that we started with about 6 years ago was reintroducing Cincinnati to the national market, because we had really been off the radar screen for at least a decade. So the whole idea of building up national awareness and positioning for Cincinnati, reintroducing the new product. And then it's significant amount of marketing, going to industry trade shows, FAM trips, familiarization trips, bringing the meeting planners in, introducing them to the product, letting them touch it, feel it, smell it, and experience it. And we have a number of 10 sales managers who do direct sales, going to D.C., where the vast majority of national associations are headquartered, Chicago, some of the hotbeds for major association and industry headquarters. And then we also try to encourage a lot of those industry meetings to meet here, like National Coalition of Black Meeting Planners. A lot of times, Mark, some of the key conventions that we go after, we do very specific targeting, what we call Cincinnati's Most Wanted, based on need dates, specific size. Do they fit here? Are they compatible? Do they have some symbiotic relationship with thought leaders here in Cincinnati or local chapters? But some of those conventions are very important to opening up other doors, like World Choir Games last year from an international perspective. Also opens up doors to choral and music and arts-related conventions. NAACP, as you can imagine, after 2001 was a major turning point for us. So we're always looking for conventions that are not only provide the immediate economic impact and the business results, but also open up doors to other conventions as well.
You were saying the NAACP was a major turning point for the city. You know, Cincinnati had that image problem, and we've discussed it before, after the unrest in 2001. The city has gotten past that. It's not really struggling with that anymore.
Yeah, it really isn't. It's something that we often find ourselves talking about here in Cincinnati, but the rest of the world has moved on. With the National Baptist Convention, the NAACP Convention, Urban League coming next year, it's an issue that, quite frankly, when we went head-to-head for NAACP with Las Vegas, we went to NAACP and said, look, we're like any other city. Come to Cincinnati, celebrate the work that we've done, how far we've come, and the work that we still need to do. So we turned it into a positive, and it made it very relevant as a city and a destination for NAACP.
Now, I take it that the two of you aren't really competing, that you're working hand in hand. Is that correct?
Well, we do. We work hand in hand. I mean, that's first and foremost. When it comes to groups, we have competed for groups, but by the same token, we accommodate each other with groups. I mean, some of the large groups that Dan had mentioned will find their way over to stay in hotels in Northern Kentucky, again, because of the proximity and because the convention groups are so large that, there's a spillage in effect. And they come over to stay in primarily our River Center hotels, which are along the Ohio. And a lot of times also we have groups that we may bid on that may be too large for the facilities we have in Northern Kentucky, and then we will attempt to keep them within the region.
And so it's a good relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. We collaborate on a lot of different projects and initiatives, and as Eric said, it's probably a small 10 to 15% of the smaller meetings that may stay in a hotel on either side or one or two hotel pieces of business. But the larger, what we call citywide, things like NAACP, the World Choir Games, National Baptist, those, in their minds, Northern Kentucky is part of the Cincinnati downtown, and that's the way we sell it. We don't discern one's in Kentucky, one's in Ohio, and quite frankly, the clients don't care. They see it as Cincinnati, USA, and it's part of the downtown package.
What's the largest convention that either one of you has ever had?
Well, for us, one of the largest, just in sheer volume, is an annual that we have called Educational Testing Services, ETS. It's 24,000 room nights every year. It's an annual we've had for a number of years. It just keeps growing. These are all the AP testers that come in, and they take over the city for about a month. And it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of business. And they're under the radar screen. You'll hear all about the NAACPs and the World Choir Games. Nobody will hear or know about ETS, but it's one of our largest, especially as an annual.
And Erica, what's the...
Well, we do ones that are not the size and scope of Cincinnati, but some continual large ones. For example, this month we have an organization called the Regional Jewelers Organization, RJO. And they'll probably be... This will be a good hit for us, anywhere from 1,200 to 1,500 attendees staying for three or four nights. That's really our maximum output because of the size of our convention center. And sometimes we will have larger events that like Christian youth organizations, which may go to the Bank of Kentucky Arena, and those will be larger. We get those on a regular basis as well.
And just to wrap up, what is the future of the convention business in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky? How's it looking?
I'll speak for both of us. Very bright. We just since 2005, we've booked 1.5 million room nights for conventions and about $440 billion in direct spending from the conventioneers. We've had 8 straight years of positive growth. That includes Northern Kentucky and the region as a whole. We've got about 1,000 additional rooms coming online over the next one and a half years. The momentum in the city on both sides has just been fantastic. You'll always have your challenges and your obstacles to overcome, but for the most part, we're on an upper roll.
Dan and Eric, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Welcome.
My guests have been Dan Lincoln, CEO of the Cincinnati Convention and Visitors Bureau, and also Eric Summey, CEO of the Northern Kentucky Convention and Visitors Bureau. A rash of people and businesses lately, including Paula Deen, JCPenney, and United Airlines, have been scurrying to improve their online images. In Focus on Technology, WVXU's Ann Thompson reports what they did, what they should have done, and what changes might be in the future as customers and companies continue to communicate through social media.
Managing member of the Moorline Loggerhouse, Greg Hardman, thinks back to the spring of 2012 when his restaurant took out a full-page ad encouraging out-of-town baseball fans to come before or after the game. It was that ad that referred to itself as Wrigley's South that prompted a Reds fan to criticize the ad on a blog.
And within minutes, it caught on like wildfire. That was posted about 8 o'clock in the morning, roughly, and by noontime, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Facebook requests being posted on our Moorline Loggerhouse website.
By noon, the restaurant had issued an apology and said it was not trying to insult any Reds fans. The next day, Reds management came to Moorline's defense, saying a small market team needs help in reaching bigger markets to bring in business.
Obviously, in hindsight, if we could have taken it all back, we wouldn't have liked to have gone through that episode. But I really believe that we grew from it and that, we had an emergency meeting that morning, 2 hours into it, and we talked it through, and we felt that it was important to, issue an apology. And it was also important to leave all of the posts on our Facebook pages and all of our social media.
The Loggerhouse now has a full-time person who monitors the restaurant's social media 24/7. And if there's any sort of controversy, it is brought to the attention of management immediately. That episode pales in comparison to some recent national examples. In May, JCPenney had to defend itself over a teapot that many said looked like Hitler. In response, the store tweeted, "Any resemblance to the Nazi leader was totally unintentional, and if we had designed it to look like something, we would have gone with a snowman or something fun." Amy's Baking Company in Scottsdale, Arizona, faced a flood of hateful Facebook posts this spring after customers were disappointed with the food. She went to the TV show Kitchen Nightmares to prove critics wrong, and it apparently backfired. Chef Ramsey sits at a table at Amy's Baking Company.
I am 75 minutes in, and so far, I've had an undercooked pizza.
I know you've been waiting.
I'm going to start eating my ticket in a minute.
Oh, okay. I'm going to tell her you're starving. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. Blue cheese, mushrooms, marinated, garlic aioli, white truffle oil, and crispy bacon bits. And a soggy bun that's just full of grease. Come on.
He also found a salmon burger to taste like dry cat food. He spoke to owners Sammy and Amy Buzzaglo about it.
Believe it or not, my intentions are good. You're shaking your head already.
I'm listening.
It's become evident that you can't take criticism. Why is that?
Are you seriously asking me why I'm
sorry? Yeah, I am.
You don't have to cry here. I don't want you to cry. You don't have to cry.
I'm not going to cry, Sammy.
In Facebook posts, Amy and Sammy thanked loyal customers and called the critics stupid people.
Those two examples are classic.
Drew Boyd is an assistant professor of marketing and innovation at UC's Linder College of Business and reacts to Amy's baking company and JCPenney posts.
When you look at the mistakes that the companies are making, the other famous one that continues to be referenced is the United Airlines breaking the man's guitar and not addressing it right away. And I think that is what makes companies fearful about social media. They see these aberrant stories, the viral effect of bad news, and it makes them reluctant to embrace it the way they should and could.
Boyd says businesses make the mistake of seeing social media as a corporate communications function or something the legal department must deal with rather than training all employees to respond.
Social media is a managerial tool for everybody. And yes, you can assign it to a particular people to handle certain things, but the nature of your business, if a customer were to walk in and complain about something, it's not always the complaint department or the customer service department that has to address that. It can be other people in the business that address that, but they have to have the skills to know how to listen to the conversation, join the conversation in the appropriate way, and ultimately respond and shape that belief, just like they would do if a customer were standing right in front of them.
Boyd sums it up in a list of do's and don'ts. Do take the high road, he says. Do take responsibility and do take action. He says don't flame, don't blame, and don't claim to do something you're not going to do. He says companies are getting better in the social arena. It's just that the media are focusing on the negatives.
But I think what you'll see in the future are better tools to monitor the social web. I think you'll see better corporate practices in terms of training, responsibility, and accountability. I think there's also a missing piece in the web itself. Whereas Web 1.0 was all about access to information, Web 2.0 is all about access to people. I think Web 3.0 is going to be access to the truth.
Boyd says this will give you the ability to know the person you're talking to is legitimate. In the meantime, Paula Deen fans have taken to social media to defend the celebrity chef. They've created a Facebook page boycotting the Food Network after it dropped her show. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Ann Thompson.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. The technical director is Rick Andrus. I'm Mark Haney.